on today's Compassion Radio.
I thought, now, how many Americans, if they said so-and-so is an actor or a musician or author of books, would the first line of your identity on the internet be so-and-so is a Christian? Hmm. I mean, that is something we do to others, but we don't expect others to do to us.
Welcome back, friends, for Compassion Radio. A few programs ago, we reintroduced you to a great friend and ministry partner of this ministry, someone who's earned the right to tell it like it is. As one of the bravest and foremost scholars, relief workers, peace negotiators, and all-around kingdom go-to guy, he's seen how the Lord really equips his church to deal with the world's biggest challenges, and how faith is at the heart of every lasting solution. Today, we get to peek behind the curtain a little and tackle the bigger questions of why we should even care when the world suffers, and how the church should stand against seemingly impossible odds. We're not tilting at windmills here. There's real power at hand, and in our hands, if we'll pick up the tools that God has already given us. Here's this important interview. Joining us on the program again today is our dear friend and a mentor of mine and a great friend to the ministry over the years and personally to Norman Shear Nelson, Dr. James Jennings of Conscious International. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Brian.
If we could spend the next minute, doctor, talking about the spiritual principles here, why you go, how you go, and what it's like to be a Christian activist. What does it even mean to be a Christian activist? Is it different than being an activist in some other realm or in under some other authority?
I thank you for the question. As most of your listeners know, Bram, because you cover this kind of topic often, this is a time of great danger for the Church of Jesus Christ all over the world, but it's simultaneously a time of great opportunity. So it helps me to think about where we should position ourselves as Christians. First, biblically, what does the Bible teach us to do? Go and serve. But also historically and geographically, how did it happen that Asia is now being swept of its Christians? I mean, I'm talking about Central Asia down through the Middle East. That's been going on for 1,000 years. Where are we today on that? Where should we be in terms of biblical and historical and geographical grappling with these problems? Sometimes I think the church, as I said, is failing, and sometimes I think it's amazing what the Lord is doing through people surrendered to the Lord. But persecution is one of the issues, and that's why it's dangerous in some of these countries. We have to confront the truth that churches and individual Christians all over the world are facing bloody persecution and martyrdom as bad as anything that happened under the Roman Empire, under the Nazis, and under the communists.
In this generation, doctor, the kind of persecution we're talking about, is it basically just the same old story since the beginning of time? The kind of torture and degradation and dehumanizing efforts that the devil puts in the hearts of men to go after Christians? Or is there something new that you're seeing that is unique in this century?
Okay, I think you've asked the right question, Bram, and that's this. Yes, it is the same. People are actually tortured physically and beheaded and crucified and everything else for their faith. Now, even more insidious attacks, however, come from cultural practices that are godless, that weaken the core fiber of Christian belief and practice. Today we're seeing it in our country and in our world. And those attacks, I think what's interesting is that the church has never been defeated by persecution. The blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. But it has been weakened, and in a sense, if it's defeated, it's defeated because we weaken our faith and we don't stand up to the issues. So the way we deal with this, as I said, in Conscience International, is put our faith to practice in our feet and hands and shoulders, going out to meet people in need. In one sense, that's a demonstration of what Christ called us to do. And if you demonstrate it, it actually inspires others, I think, to follow that and to act that. So it comes down to what we value most, our lives or our testimony or our spiritual heritage. You know, before the Roman Empire converted to Christianity under Constantine, just a few years earlier, there was the most severe, fiercest persecution ever under the pagan emperor Diocletian. I was reading about some of the martyrs recently, And they stood up in court and said, no, I will die rather than follow your pagan belief, because the Lord Christ has promised us that we will be victorious even in death. And I wonder how many of us would be unwilling to undergo persecution or would rather maybe take the easy way out. So the state of the world today is concerning. There are many challenges, to put it mildly, but external pressures have never been able, nor will they ever be able, to stop the Church of Jesus Christ, for it is indeed built upon a rock. It's up to us to stay true to the Church's mission, to exercise our calling as disciples of Christ, and for us at Conscience International, it's hand and heart, shoulders, to do what Christ has called us to do, to respond to needs. And because the world is so much smaller than it used to be, my great-grandfather had to take his horse and wagon and take 3 days to go across the mountain and get supplies and come back. Today, we can go almost anywhere in the world in 24 hours. So you, Bram, and certainly Norm and Cher Nelson before you have led the way in showing that we can actually deal with people in China or in Zanzibar or any place if there's an open door and a calling. And people say, why do you go there instead of the inner cities in this country? Well, it depends on your calling. I happen to speak Arabic, so I spent a lot of time in the Arabic world, in the Arab world, ministering there, but also its opportunity in the gospel, in the book of Acts. They wanted to go into Bithynia, so they went to Macedonia instead. So you take the opportunities that come to go and go and go and serve. Yeah.
We've often talked on the program about while the window is open, we have to act. There have been many countries that you have traveled with, Dr. Nelson, and have seen great welcoming. I mean, they did the Advent in Afghanistan program just shortly after the first battles with the Taliban. The place was wide open for Americans, especially. You'd in there and say, why in the world have you noticed us suddenly? And what do you stand for? And once you all got to know the warlords that were running the north and the south parts of the country, suddenly an invitation came in to come share Jesus, which was stunning to me at the time, too. And off they went.
You're right. Norm did marvelous work there in Afghanistan. We were there together at one point.
And when we talked to the folks in Compassion Radio and said to them, the window may not be open for very long. We've got to do something while the window is there. You can see what's happening there. We can help people that are on the ground. We can get involved directly and help seed the church. We did that work. And then the wall came crashing down again. And there was no opportunity to get back in at all after a certain year in the middle of 2000s. I have no idea when the door is going to open again for us to walk back in or whether we have to keep climbing over the mountains to get there. But there are plenty of places like that around the world. So if you could tell me at this point from your experience, Dr. Jennings, where are the doors open? Where are the windows cracked so we can get a glimpse of what's happening there? And where are the doors shutting?
Let me first say that Norm Nelson, the founder of this program, Compassion Radio, and I worked together in Sudan many times. And we found at one point, believe it or not, at 3 a.m., we were kicked out of the country. We came back. They met us with limousines and brass bands and had banquets for us, and we talked with the top leadership of the country. Its persistence, even in the face of walls and closed doors and all of that. I think the open doors for Christians nowadays are in countries where, A, we can access, B, where we speak the language, C, where the church is already established. And that's most of Africa, okay, and Latin America as well, where there are many very fervent and zealous Christians in both those continents. I think if you talk about closed doors and needy areas, it's got to be the Middle East, the Muslim world. And there's only a small percentage of the missionary dollar that has ever gone to the Muslim world. People just give up and say that's hopeless, but it's not. And that's not the way the disciples did in the book of Acts in the New Testament. Yeah. Perhaps we could say that China is maybe the greatest opportunity, because under the bamboo curtain during those days, before China opened up to the world and changed its economic system at least, there was no possibility almost. All the missionaries had been driven out before World War II, and some survived during World War II, but it was closed for a long time, and then it opened. And there's great opportunity there and in the Chinese sphere in Southeast Asia.
When Sandy and I traveled together to China, we were kind of surprised to hear that they were being more vocal about their future plans. Because this time we went through the open door. We actually were invited in on the government level to go see what kind of gospel things were happening in the Three Self Church in China, which had never really been perceived as being very evangelical in the West. But it turns out they have a very strong evangelical element within that organization, and we got to meet those who were actually preaching the gospel with passion and finding ways to get Bibles to people who had never got them before, ever, no matter who had gone in there. But because we were able to go through the open doors that were provided for us, we were able to hear from the mouths of people in government what their next plans were. And they've said quite directly that the public, the acknowledged, the registered church has about 2 years or so before they're going to close down everybody else who is not registered. So the challenge to the registered churches was go find those who are underground and invite them to come out into the light. When they do, we'll give them the same status you have. If they don't, they're going to be considered traitors and they're going to be pursued as terrorists. So it seems like there's a weird and new kind of carrot and stick being used about the registered and unregistered churches of China. And that means hundreds of millions of people's lives are at stake. And so my guess is that those kind of opportunities that we used to think about working with the unregistered churches may close very solidly and lock out the West for a very long time. New opportunities might be coming in places they were not expecting them. I'm kind of concerned myself, Jim, about what's going to come to China in the next 3 to 5 years. Whether getting Bibles into closed countries, relief supplies into dangerous refugee camps, or providing training and theology books to barefoot pastors as they begin their ministry. These are all the kind of things we love to share with you every day. And more importantly, they're the kind of things we like to do. You know, for 78 years now, Compassion Radio partners like you have absolutely been up to the challenge. Will you help us get ready for the next big faith challenges and opportunities of 2021? Your gift today will provide the means for us to begin some new initiatives with our Bible and relief partners that reach farther than we've ever gone before. It begins with you and your brave investment in kingdom communication and kingdom action. It's our strong desire to be going deeper, to go farther, to be braver than we've ever been, and to bring you the stories that you just won't hear anywhere else. I simply ask that you would keep giving so that we can give back to the world through our strategic ministry partners and to you with inspiring programming on this radio station and over the internet. Here's how. The first and best way to reach us is through our website, CompassionRadio.com. It's available 24/7. Our safe and secure order form there will get your gift to the places needed most, and we'll do it right away. You can also support us with a call during Pacific Time business hours at 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. You can also text COMPASSION to 53445 to give right through your phone, no matter where you are. Of course, you can also put a stamp on an envelope and mail your gift to our Compassion Radio office, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Again, that's P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. However you give, we'd love to hear more about why you believe in Compassion Radio. We so much value your messages and letters. And know this, your gift is deeply appreciated. Thank you for loving us in this way. So it seems like there's a weird and new kind of carrot and stick being used about the registered and unregistered churches of China. And that means hundreds of millions of people's lives are at stake. My guess is that those kind of opportunities that we used to think about working with the unregistered churches may close very solidly and lock out the West for a very long time. New opportunities might be coming in places they were not expecting them. I'm kind of concerned myself, Jim, about what's going to come to China in the next 3 to 5 years.
I agree with you, and I think you have to ask, what is the reason for this attitude on the part of the government? It very much parallels what the Roman Empire went through centuries ago. And that is when the church begins to boom and has great success and is burgeoning and people are being converted and becoming sincere Christians, that challenges the whole foundation of the state, that is the communist doctrine, and as it was for the pagan Romans. And what they thought held their country together was their pagan belief. So there was severe persecution and doors were closed and people ended up in prison and being killed. I mean, there's been, you know this very well from your recent trip, an enormous success of the Christian church in China under terrible conditions.
Yes.
And so that is a thrilling story. Yeah. And now, how does it develop from here on? I think the answer is your prediction is right. There will be a great period of suppression, and it'd be hard to imagine, it'd be unimaginable, the bloody persecution in that country with the great population. But the church will triumph. Now, that's different than in some places where the church has been wiped out, and certainly Central Asia, much of the Middle East, that happened over the last 1,000 years, the Armenian genocide being one example, yeah. You know, 125 years ago, that left millions of Christians dead. So it's uneven all over the world, and there are opportunities, as you say, open doors and there are closed doors.
The thing that's kind of interesting for me at this stage in our ministry, we've always been a responsive organization. We find out where the needs are, we listen to people like you, and then we try to find ways to get people interested and activated to join you in that work, being proactive with your faith. It didn't occur to me until this year that we might actually be called to be witnesses to what is to come. And hearing these kind of openness and transparency coming out of communist officials in China, saying it like it is, this is what we are going to do, was a new experience for me. And I think God was letting us in the room for a reason, if nothing else but to be witnesses to what's to come and to be responsible with that information. We do want to be responsible as God reveals things to us through earthly authorities or through his own spirit. But I'm kind of concerned that we will always in the West keeping a knee-jerk reaction kind of church, where if we're really pushed to it, we'll finally do something. I do believe there are people in every church in this country that are perceptive enough to see what's coming, and they live by the faith that will be revealed later. And I'm hoping we've been able to connect with more of those people along the way, because they're the ones that will make plans. They're the ones that will dream dreams. They're the ones that will set aside resources and be ready for the opportunity when it comes. And I'm just praying that God raises up more of those kind of people in our own country along the way.
Well, we need to have courage in doing that. I remember in Uzbekistan, Central Asia, under the communist regime there, the church had been built, even after great difficulty, they built it. But when they had their communion, I was there to see it. The people who served the communion, they asked those who wanted to receive communion to stand up in the pews where they were, and they passed them. And so you know that all through the church there are the stooges of the government or the yes. spies or the secret police, and they're taking down the names of those people who stood saying that I am a disciple of Christ,
yes.
and I will testify to that. And I wonder how many of us, if we knew that the secret police were in the back of the room taking names and they said, are you a follower of Christ or not, would you stand up even though it's illegal, unpopular, and forbidden in these churches or countries? If it ever came to that in our country, how many of us would have the courage to say, yes, I follow the Lord Jesus Christ?
I wonder too. And with the technology going the way it is, understanding that the reason that China, as our example today, is so ready to act on their intentions is because they truly believe that technology is finally in place to track every single human being in their country in real time.
They have that, yes.
So with that capability, they're going to force the question, the big question, are you open or are you hidden? And I do wonder, in the generations to come, what will we really lose if we lost our privacy? Would we not gain something else entirely, which is the ability to say, I have nothing left to lose or have nothing to hide? I can't hide it anywhere.
Right.
So I guess my faith doesn't have to be lived in the open, whether I like it or not. In that regard, I think that is something that would be very praiseworthy in the New Testament, especially in Revelation, where Jesus talks directly to the churches about where their first love and their first passions are. So perhaps the Lord, in a severe kind of mercy, is preparing our entire world for a time when to be a disciple of Christ is not something that can be obfuscated. It's going to be something that it has to be proclaimed because it simply is, and everyone has to know it. It sounds like dangerous times. It also sounds like kind of a liberating time, too, for the church.
I think you're right about that, about having nothing to hide and being able to give your testimony, even being forced to give it, as to who you are. Yesterday, I looked at a website that had an Egyptian actor in a TV series that's on TV and fairly popular. So I wanted to know who this actor is and what his name is, and I clicked on it, and the first line identified so-and-so is a Muslim who is acting in an American TV series. And I thought, now, how many Americans, if they said so-and-so is an actor or a musician or even an author of books, would the first line of your identity on the internet be so-and-so is a Christian and a writer of books or an actor or a musician? I mean, that positionalized him. He couldn't help but be identified as a Muslim in that situation. But it's something we do to others, but we don't expect others to do to us.
Yeah, that's
the
true.
The Chinese might do it differently.
Well, in this culture, since we have to talk to people who are listening to this program, they're the ones we want to minister to and encourage and challenge and dare to do great things. If you could, for me, Dr. Jennings, just in a few words, describe for us in our culture, what really is the cost of discipleship in our generation?
In many countries, it is the loss of everything that you hold dear. In other words, to flee your country because of persecution means that your whole life is, the next 25 years, is going to be absorbed in trying to get back on your feet. That's a cost that most people in our country would not relish and many would not be willing to do. So that's one thing. The persecution may be infrequent, but it's increasing in frequency and it's real. I think that maybe there are more subtle things about that. But we can use our own voice and our own example to go where others are afraid to go or will not go or cannot go and do what we can and use that as a model for others to not be afraid because the Lord said, I'm with you always.
The price to be paid means something is to be gained because God never has us flush our resources down the toilet for no reason. So I believe that as we invest in his kingdom purposes that he does not forget that. And if God keeps track of those debts, he pays the debts he owes, and he's happy to pay his children for good work. I'm sure of that. So whether we see it as a transactional thing about giving God what's his, letting him do what he wants with it, or whether we see ourselves as stewards of those things to go along with the resources God gives us and to be part of the solution for things that God allows us to be part of, to be peacemakers, to be chain breakers, to be wound healers, whatever it is, I pray that we'll have more and more opportunity to do that, and you and I together, Jim, that we would be able to be on the field seeing what God's doing and be part of it ourselves more than we ever have before. And as our people make it possible for Compassion Radio to continue, and I know there's lots of great new projects you have going, and it would be my joy that if God tarries and we're still doing this work, that we'll have a chance to go with you and to be part of the solution once again.
I want to thank you and salute you for your companionship, for your sharing the vision, and for your commitment and enthusiasm to doing this kind of work for the kingdom of God.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Dr. Jim Jennings of Conscious International for today's insight and challenge. The first order of business, of course, is to pray, and we mean that. And pray for Jim and his teams around the world that do their work in the world's hardest places. His people have not been exempt from the dangers of serving in war zones, and many have been persecuted and even held hostage. You can learn more about their work and why we partner with them at ConscienceInternational.org. We have a very special thank you for your generous support to keep this ministry on the air and in the field. It's a fresh take on that amazing story of the life of Jesus, written by the Apostle John. We're calling it the Dynamic Gospel for a lot of reasons, and I'd love to send you one if you ask for it. Just let us know when you contact us today with your gift. God bless you and your growing faith in 2021. To learn more about our history, our projects, to hear our podcast, and to make your love gift, simply go to our website, CompassionRadio.com. Our toll-free number is manned during business hours Pacific time at 1-800-868-2478. If you get voicemail, just leave a full message and we will call you back as soon as the office is open. You can also write us and send your gift by mail to Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. God is still transforming lives in the here and now and changing futures one heart at a time. Perhaps one of those amazing transformation stories is you. We'd love to hear about it. I'm Bram Floria. Thanks again for joining us today. We'll see you again Monday for an all-new Compassion Radio.